I actually think marketing has to do R&D. I always thought they should do R&D. I don't think marketing marketing has really taken a backward step. I think we're still doing marketing the way it was done 50 years ago. And everything else has moved forward. In your organization, if you looked at marketing, we're still somehow spending a lot of money broadcasting, whatever it is, or creating what we call a brand. But in fact, brand is often created today by what you're associated with.
This is podtech.net. Welcome to Marketing Voices, featuring the fresh perspectives of innovative marketing leaders and examining how social media is changing marketing throughout the world. Here's your host, Jennifer Jones.
Hi, this is Jennifer Jones, and here on Marketing Voices today, I have the beloved Regis McKenna, who's really a marketing guru of technology marketing, and he is very well known in Silicon Valley and around the world, and is now a VC and not a marketeer at this point anymore, not at least in terms of what he practices day to day, but he is a pioneer and he's developed many of the marketing practices that are still being used in technology marketing today. And he's especially well known for working with many of the technology greats, Intel, Microsoft, Apple, Electronic Arts, almost you name it, he's worked with them. And he's not only that, is he an incredible thinker and marketer, but he's a prolific author. He's written 5 books. And before the podcast went live, we were talking about just what all these books meant. And I had forgotten how he had actually predicted a lot of what we're going to be talking about here today. So with that, Regis, I welcome you. And with full disclosure, I have to tell you that I used to work at Regis McKenna, Inc. in the 80s. And so Regis was my boss for a period of about 6 years, so which I always laugh with people and say they were like dog years. So it was really like 42 years.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, Regis, welcome to Marketing Voices.
Thank you, Jennifer.
So the first question is, what do you think about social media? I mean, here we are in the midst of it, and what's your feeling about social media? Podcasts, wikis, blogs, all of that. How do you look at it?
Well, I actually think it's sort of the natural evolution of the technology. I mean, it came about largely because of Web 2.0 and various types of protocols that were developed over the last, really coming about over the last 5-10 years. But it's really the extension of technology into this whole service world. And once you start putting the tools out into the consumer's hands, they start essentially figuring out how to put it to use. So much of the innovations come about from the marketplace themselves. That's almost always been true, whether or not the marketplace was another OEM, whether that marketplace was the end user, listening to customers, and not necessarily asking specifically for their ideas, but put it into their hands and give them the tools, and they start creating their own user content. It wasn't too long ago that we were talking about the fact that, yes, there's all the access to this internet, but the content, there's no real valuable content. And I wrote in one of my books that people will become their own content. And the reason is because there's infinite diversity. So when you have infinite diversity in your marketplace, it starts, a lot of those people become highly creative in how to use that media. It's always been true in initial media. No matter what it has been, is the early users. Back in radio, people started creating their own radio stations. People started actually, if television was an expensive network, but it grew on the heels of radio. So the technology in the hands of people essentially creates all kinds of outcomes that are unexpected. From a social network, it began really communicating one-to-one. When you think about the intranet itself, the ability to exchange legally or illegally music one-to-one, that's been going on. In fact, this building that we're in right now, even going way back when Wall Street Journal first, moved out here, was because of a satellite network that enabled them to localize and build special editions for localized markets by sending the information and the news through a satellite to this plant.
Wow.
And that I used to use this as an example, in fact, and that was many, many years ago, and now they're not here anymore because the technology has evolved so over the years that it enables people to do this by internet around the world. Or World Wide Web. So social media, I think, is really kind of a natural outcome of what we've seen evolve over the last 10, 15 years.
So what do you think is the most valuable about it?
Well, for one thing, you don't have control over it. I mean, it's going to continue to evolve, particularly when you see that we're looking at the next 2-3 billion people who are going to be on the internet within the next 10-15 years. It probably will be filled with surprises. And you see the development of a Google that really didn't so much develop the technology as they did use people content-to-content sites. So they're looking at it someone over on one side of the world who has developed a lot of content and another person. It's just like having user content, and they connect them. And they give you access to that particular library and that particular. It's like coming into my home and accessing that library. And so that, in effect, was built as a search engine to create your own social networks, if you will. So you begin to communicate and feedback. I think when you have that many people, you need feedback. You can't broadcast to people anymore because there's too much diversity within that market. So one of the things I say is that access is replacing broadcast. Broadcast used to be going out to people. In access media, when you put these tools into people's hands, they begin essentially looking for what they want. And you have to listen. And listening becomes part of an exchange media rather than a one-way street. It's always been that way with the internet or with the World Wide Web. It's a two-way street. No media we've seen before has been that way.
So is that your next book? Access is...
No, that was in my last book, actually, Total Access.
Oh, that's right.
Right. Yeah. No, the what I've been thinking about is really this whole idea of service, because Moore's Law is really not so much about technology and price as it is the creation of services. When you look at a smartphone, or you look at even a cell phone, it's not the device itself that has any value anymore. It's what's in it, what content. And what are we doing putting on those things? We put our pictures. Kids go back and forth with mutual, instant messaging back and forth all the time. They send each other all kinds. They're all my grandkids that are all under, 16 years of age. They all have their own blogs.
Right, yeah.
And they put photos up, they put descriptions up, they send this stuff around.
Right.
This is what the new media has done for them. They use the tools, and they use them much better than any of us. Now, the fact is that it is highly diverse, and we don't know where it's going. It's a pretty diverse entity in industry at this point. So to me, that means that there's a lot of opportunity. In fact, there's the need for an opportunity of people to kind of set the social standard by becoming the thing. Just like YouTube became sort of, there were a lot of companies around doing user-generated videos, lots of them. I mean, I can remember, seeing business plans around this, 5 years ago. But YouTube really grabbed the ball and suddenly became sort of the place. And I think it in podcasting, if you will, or in any of this kind of user-generated media, we've yet to see sort of this aggregated concept or aggregated brand that says this is the place that is your network for distributing and gathering back this information.
Well, we hope that PodTech's that's definitely a part of the goal. Really, it is to be that for podcasting.
I really like it. I mean, I have something like 400 podcasts on my Handspring.
Yeah, so you're really a big believer.
So that I listen to, and I collect them all the time, and I listen to them, and I particularly like sort of auditing the courses over at Berkeley or at various kinds of things. And I have several of them that I do all the time and have gone through. And you can download the whole class schedule. You can subscribe to them. And in effect, you're always getting your updates on everything from Stardate, to Spanish lessons and to history courses and so forth. So I really think it is the wave of the future. But at this point, there's no sort of one authoritative and I don't think it can actually be a standard in the sense, because the standards are into sort of the enabling media, but the standard has to become so much more of a brand that is known for its quality and for its ability to be a place where people can find a marketplace where they gather and exchange and can move across that boundary very quickly. So you go into Google, but you're out of Google. You're into some other place. You go into Yahoo, and you're in and you're out. And so it becomes the portal, if you will, in that world. I don't think we've seen anybody really establish that at this point.
Huh, very interesting. So what do you think that CMOs today should do about getting over their fear of trying social media? Maybe I should back up a bit, because what I'm really seeing is a lot of people who want to do it, big companies just are really afraid to put their toe in the water. Do you have any advice for them to say, look, this is how you need to think about it so you start to do it?
Yeah, I actually think marketing has to do R&D. I always thought they should do R&D. I don't think marketing marketing has really taken a backward step. I think we're still doing marketing the way it was done 50 years ago. And everything else has moved forward. In your organization, if you looked at marketing, we're still somehow spending a lot of money broadcasting, whatever it is, or creating what we call a brand. But in fact, brand is often created today by what you're associated with. And so, you know, I still go back. I was just having lunch with a fellow who's, you know, starting a company in this whole new virtual space area. And was talking about this whole idea. You just can't go out and sort of establish a brand. In the old world, you know, media world, if you will, it took $200 million, $300 million to create even a presence in that. Small companies can't do that. But small companies can build sort of an alliance network. They can build their own affinity groups that enable them to become sort of create the buzz, if you will, within that affinity group, and it grows from there out into the associations. And we were talking about that for the last 2 hours and how that comes about. And I think in a way it goes back to, in many ways, back to the old Silicon Valley thing. You know, there was when it was the Adidas network,
right?
You know, before cell phones and before networks and all that kind of stuff, where people ran around and talked about a deal, but somehow that information about a hot new little company, it got out there because the network was very small and you could actually know and communicate with everybody. Today you're dealing with much broader media, diversified levels of sophistication and understanding and education. I mean, you could have, you know, kids that are 10 years old are smarter than people who are 30 years old, even though the 30-year-old may have been in the technology business for a long time. The kids seem to pick up on things. And so you have this vast network of people, different languages, different cultures, different boundaries, and so forth, that you have to learn about, because that is the world we're moving into. And I think marketing is remiss and that it is still relying on old ways and not experimenting with the new. I came back, that was about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, from another country. I don't want to mention the company, but I was in a meeting with the CEO, multi-billion dollar company. I mean, one of the largest companies in the world. And they were saying, so what should we be looking at and what should we be investigating? And I said, you know, you really ought to be looking at blogs and how the impact they have, not only in among your employees, but among plants around the world and user groups of your products and so forth, and because I think it's going to be a wave. And he said, he just didn't want to have any part of it. He says, I have no idea why that should be part of what we're doing. And I remember coming back, picking up the cover of Business Week, of the Kitchen Business Week, and it said, you know, if you know, to the business world, if you don't know about blogs, you should. And I mailed it to him. I said, you know, because this will have a huge impact, even though it may not have at that point any commercial value, it has social value and cultural value within the networks of people who buy your product, who use your product, who distribute your product, and who work for you. And so understanding that whole environment, I think, is critical. And you can't go out and research it the way you traditionally did. You almost have to get within those blogs, within those social networks to research them. You can't do it by studying them through some abstract research.
Yeah, no, it's true. And the concern so many people have is then the time. I mean, the CEO, there's no way that in many cases these CEOs we talk to will do more than maybe read them and very peripherally and superficially almost. So how do you get them there? I mean, you dealt with this back, 20 years ago. How do you get people to make change?
Well, it's hard to get them to do it. There are going to be some that will experiment. And I think the large thing is to try to get them to understand this whole evolution of marketing, quite frankly. And I generally begin a lot of my presentations on that, that I go through the evolution of marketing. It's always changed. And it's always changed in response to technology. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the technology of radio changed marketing. Procter & Gamble invented the soaps, which in order to sponsor, radio programs that was very diverse and nobody knew how to pay for radio when it started. So Procter & Gamble came up with the idea of sponsorship. And television grew on that. And television became a demonstration media for marketing. Instead of just, talking about something, you could now see people and identify personalities with a product. And we started talking about personalities and a lot of, head games came in during that time. Social psychologists and others began getting into the advertising meeting. But advertising, broadcast advertising, created a barrier. There was you, the TV, and then the user. And the user, you didn't call them. You didn't go online and write back to them. And they didn't feed back to you. And this is in a way, I remember talking to some of the marketing people several years ago at General Motors and suggesting that they really build a network with a lot of their users because that feedback mechanism will enable them to do. And they the marketing VP was unable to sell it to senior management. And so as a result, they just continued with the traditional ways of doing things. So they never had that direct feedback. Lexus, on the other hand, really does talk to their customers. And they talk to their users, and they get feedback. And so as a result, it has become sort of a popular growth car. And so staying in touch with that customer, and that customer today is not watching television, not that young growth customer. It's the old, potato couches that are watching television. And if they are watching it, they if they're the dynamic people that you want as your customers that are your leading edge, the innovators in your marketplace, they're probably TiVoing it anyway. So as a result, I mean, I haven't watched a commercial in I don't know how many years, simply because everything's TiVo.
Right.
And I'm certainly not 20 years old anymore. Far from it.
Right. So your advice would really be, look, get with it, do some R&D, just realize you've got to get there, and if you're doing your job right, just get over your fear and go.
Yeah, and I think it's important to show them the evolution of the technology itself. Marketing is people intensive, when we had factories filled with people, and what you did, you automated them in order to make things more efficient and to reduce costs. You are up against big competition in the marketing world today. Everybody is marketing. And in fact, in this new world, what is interesting is, and I say this in total access too, is not only do people become their own content, but in that particular networked world, everybody is the distributor for everyone else. So distribution of information, which used to be separated, you had a product channel, and you had an information channel. Today, they're one and the same. And so as a result, when they came together and you begin talking to people, in effect, people now become not only their own content, but they communicate that to other people, like peer networks and social groups. They're a distributor of knowledge and information. So if you get something on a podcast or you get something on a blog, I say to my grandchild, where did you get that idea? And she'll send it back a message and say, here's where you try this, or whatever. So my grandkids are always showing me stuff to implement. And I tell them, hey, that's great. They think but in effect, they know far more than you do.
They're feeding you
the information.
Right, right.
And as a result, in the network world, everybody becomes a distributor.
Right. And I have to say, and we're going to have to, I'm so conscious of your time, we're going to have to stop here, but it is amazing. The first time I heard about podcasting was through my 15-year-old. And so there I am. You're right. And I do believe that 5 years from now, when a lot of the 15-year-olds are 20 and they're in marketing, none of this will really be an issue because they will all be there.
Sure.
There will be other things. It won't be like this fear of podcasting or whatever. It'll just be like, been there, done that. Hey, this is how we live.
Yeah, and it'll all right. You know, mesh up into other types of
right.
things with
right.
a lot more. It is only going to get better in terms of presentation and in terms of the ability of the user to develop more content. It's going to only get more better, more sophisticated. We know that. Just all you have to do is watch what happened in the evolution of other technologies that have been direct to the consumer in the marketing world. It's going to get better, and it's going to become more challenging. And if you're going to stay competitive, you've got to experiment with this stuff now to know it.
Great. Words of wisdom of Regis McKenna. Thank you very much. Awesome.
That's great,
awesome.
Jennifer,
awesome.
Thank you.
Really awesome. And so anyone who's looking for his books, your website is, I'll let you
Well,
talk
they can do
about
it on Amazon
yeah.
or www.regis.com.
Great. So Regis used to be very well known when I worked with him as Regis McKenna himself. So we always gave him a lot of grief about his card, and that's old memories too. So for those of you who would like to submit a question in the future to Marketing Voices, just please contact me at jennifer@podtech.net. And until next week, may all the voices you hear be marketing voices.